I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the town of Las Vegas, New Mexico. Come along and join us at the historic Plaza Hotel for a meetup with Dennis Ditmanson, retired National Park Ranger with three decades in the field, including a stint at the nearby Fort Union National Monument. Ditman is also a proud member of the Las Vegas Citizens Committee for Historic Preservation. We'll then visit with Yale graduate architect Elmo Baca, who's a downtown revitalization expert, historic preservation consultant, proprietor of the Indigo Theater, and a multi-generation Las Vegas resident. Next up is Sarah Jo Matthews, proprietor of the Prairie Hill Cafe and Byron T's Saloon, located in the Plaza Hotel in the heart of Old Town Las Vegas. Matthews shares her passion for not only the historic town of Las Vegas, her diner and saloon, but also way cool things to do and see in the surrounding area. As a side note, when the historic Plaza Hotel first opened back in 1882, it was touted as the Belle of the Southwest and the fanciest hotel in all of New Mexico territory. Today it remains as an elegant grand dame, so much so that it is a frequent Hollywood film location site dating from the Tom Mix silent pictures to the Longmire series, Easy Rider, Vampires, No Country for Old Men, and more. Oh yeah, and the Plaza also has a reputation of one of New Mexico's most haunted hotels. Dennis Ditmanson.
Here we are in Las Vegas.
We're talking about the Las Vegas, that interloper out to the west of us in Nevada.
Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We trace our origins to 1835.
Was it trappers or who first came?
First people that came to Las Vegas were actually a group of people known as Hinosaurios, who were Christianized Indians taken as captives by the settlers. And they were actually used in many ways as the shock troops, if you will, for the Spanish and later the Mexican government. When Santa Fe being the seat of settlement, the next step out onto the frontier was a little village called San Miguel del Vado, settled by those people. That was in 1794.
Wow.
And then in 1835, the next step out onto the frontier brought people here to Las Vegas, Las Vegas Grandes.
What brought them here? Why did they come here?
It's the typical story of available land. The village of San Miguel, the population eventually outgrew the resources that that area offered. So the next step was out onto the prairie, where there was available land, where there was good water in the Guaynas River, and there was an opportunity for people to make a better life.
So what really propelled things and brought the next level was westward migration, right?
In this case, it was eastern migration.
Oh, interesting.
Santa Fe to the west of us, yeah. So the next step towards civilization was to the east, first to San Miguel del Vado, and then farther to the east to Las Vegas here on the Guaynas River.
Interesting.
Kind of a reverse migration, yeah, if you will.
That's really fascinating. Talk to us about after Spanish ceded the lands here and became Mexican territory.
The Mexican independence came in 1821, which coincided with the arrival of the first group of traders down what became the Santa Fe Trail. Mm-hmm. What that did, the transition from Spanish government to Mexican government, was it allowed for legal commerce, if you will. The Spanish government had frowned on traders from the U.S. settlements in Missouri bringing goods into this area. The Mexican government welcomed them, and that opened a whole new field of economic opportunity for people.
Going forward, at some point, you had the United States Army coming out for protection, right?
Exactly. The Santa Fe Trail through Kansas, in particular, was subject to frequent attacks from various Native American tribes. So the Army came west, starting in 1846 with the Mexican War. General Stephen Watts Kearny brought what was called the Army of the West here to Las Vegas, arriving in 1846 and declaring this area to be part of the United States. Followed shortly thereafter in 1851 by a permanent camp, Fort Union, just to the north of us here in Las Vegas. And that presence continued from 1851 until 1891, even though the threat of attack lessened over time.
So was the advent of the railroad coming through a real game changer for Las Vegas?
Absolutely. Las Vegas began to thrive with the arrival of the traders on the Santa Fe Trail. But the next boost in economic growth happened with the arrival of the railroad in 1879. It opened a whole new level, if you will, of commercial activity.
Travel by rail has not gone away. Here we are today, and I could have taken the Amtrak from Los Angeles and gotten off in Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Absolutely. It's now the Burlington in Santa Fe. The Burlington Northern in Santa Fe is an outgrowth of the Atchison Pika in Santa Fe of, what, Judy Garland fame? The Santa Fe Railroad really opened up that whole new era. From 1879 up until after the turn of the century, the Santa Fe was the railroad in New Mexico. The arrival of other railroads from the east and from the south sort of rang a death knell. Albuquerque, for example, became a much larger hub for these other railroads, and gradually the big commercial houses here in Las Vegas ended up leaving town, moving to Santa Fe and then to Albuquerque.
And then I think it was you earlier saying there were two major railway terminuses there in Albuquerque.
In Albuquerque, yeah. I think the Denver Rio Grande was another railroad. There was another one that came in from the east that I don't remember. The Santa Fe persisted, I mean, still persists today, but in a combined, consolidated form.
Before we go, random question. Post-Civil War, a lot of the African Americans wanted to stay in the United States Army because it was one of their only hopes for a decent job, and thus the Buffalo Soldier. Were they here in New Mexico?
Absolutely. At one time, there were four Buffalo Soldier regiments. There were four in the United States Army after the Civil War.
Right.
The 9th and 10th Cavalry were Buffalo Soldier units, and the 24th and 25th Infantry were Buffalo Soldier units. At one time or another, during the existence of Fort Union, every Buffalo Soldier regiment was represented by at least one of the companies from within the regiment was stationed at Fort Union. And there are still Buffalo Soldiers buried in the local cemetery.
Oh, wow. So very much here. Yeah.
They not only were here, they still are.
To learn more about your world.
The Las Vegas Citizens Committee for Historic Preservation is a good group to deal with. There's another group called First Las Vegas Commercial Group. Is another good group to call. I'm Dennis Dittmanson, a citizen here in Las Vegas, and a history buff, both by profession, I suppose, from my earlier working days, and by avocation.
And I understand that you have 3 decades of history with the National Park Service.
Yeah, I first started Robert Utley in his biography in the Western History Quarterly back in Volume 1, Issue 1. Started his biography with the term, "But for Custer's Sins." And I guess I have to say the same thing. My first experience with the Park Service was at Custer Battlefield, starting in the 70s, and I was at it up until I retired in 2007.
You know the ghost that haunts this place? Yeah. Byron T. Mills used to own this hotel, and he was also the mayor of Las Vegas at one time.
Really?
Yeah, his photo is up on the bar wall in there.
Historic preservation consultant Elmo Baca.
My name is Elmo Baca. I'm a business owner in Las Vegas, New Mexico. I run a burst-run commercial movie house.
And your family history goes way back here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was born in Las Vegas. Uh-huh. My family lived in Tramontino, which is a really village.
You went away and went to school? Background architecture history?
Right. So I grew up here and went to high school here, graduated high school. But when I was a student, Las Vegas did not quite look the way it does today. It had not been revitalized. It was and still is a poor town, but we had lost a lot of businesses. You know, and we have a lot of commercial buildings here in this town because of the railroad. It had a tremendous trade area. And so when all of that business left town, we were left with a lot of vacant buildings. So I thought it was a depressing place when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a wonderful childhood here, I just wanted to leave and go away and see part of America. And I studied architecture in college. And when I graduated and came back, I saw Las Vegas with new eyes. I could see that there were really a lot of tremendous architectural jewels here.
So part of it was your knowledge base of architecture to give you an appreciation for what you had the whole time.
Right. You know, Las Vegas is quite literally an outdoor architectural museum of American architecture from 1830 to 1930.
Wow.
Just about every style you can imagine is here. What makes it interesting is that there's also the Spanish colonial territorial. So you have these old adobes smack next door to fantastic Victorian buildings. So
well, we're right across the street from an old Pueblo Mission church, right?
Yes. So the contrast in the styles, I think, is fascinating to a lot of people, a lot of architects themselves and urban designers.
The building we're in is a classic period piece. It's a hotel, right?
The Plaza Hotel, built in 1883, is a real peculiar form of the Italianate style. If you go to Italy, you see these grand palazzos in Florence or Rome, very formal buildings, big block buildings. And this hotel here is kind of an imitation of that, which is pretty rare to see in the American Southwest.
Really fascinating, that breadth of architectural styles, from understated, simple, clapboard-sided, to almost palaces.
I call it the Gilded Age, mm-hmm. from about 1880 to about 1910. In America, there was a lot of different styles. There was wealth in the country. People kind of wanted to one-up their neighbor and build an even fancier house mm-hmm. than the neighbor. In this town, we had not only wealthy merchants and residents, but we had incredibly fine craftsmen. We were talking today about the high quality of masonry in Las Vegas.
In the Italian stonecutters.
We had a family of Italian stonemasons here, which of course only a wealthy town could afford, mm-hmm. but if you walk around our town, you'll see really fine brick buildings, you'll see great adobe buildings, you'll see wonderful fine-cut brownstone buildings. You know, they've all lasted. We have a good climate. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of moisture here, so the stone will hold up.
Let's go back 30 years. There were two separate Las Vegases, right? East and West, and they were legally separate towns, even though they kind of glued together.
Well, the town started in what we call Old Town. So the Old Town is built around a plaza, kind of a classic Mexican-style plaza. So the town is divided by the Guaynas River, which is really a creek, but we like to call it a river. And so the west part of the town, the Old Town, the plaza side, developed first. It follows the laws of the Indies. It's also a very organic part of town. I mean, the streets go everywhere.
The terrain, the
geography, arroyos, things like that. On the other side, on the east side of town, it's a very planned, grid plan, classic Midwestern style of town. So you have the contrast between the two. You could say that this part of the town was really nourished by the Santa Fe Trail. Mm-hmm. And the other part of town was really nourished by the railroad.
Yeah,
so you have technology, you have really two different cultures living side by side.
So in the 70s, the two towns came together, right?
We finally consolidated the two towns. To be honest, there were undertones of racial differences, cultural differences, language. You know, most people spoke Spanish here in this part of town, and of course English on the other side of town. So there were a lot of differences that took years to overcome.
Here and now today, literally a slow-moving renaissance, isn't it?
Right. You know, I mentioned how many vacant buildings we had, let's say, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if you just fast forward 50 years to today, it's a really different, I mean, Bridge Street, the plaza, even the railroad district we saw today, have seen millions and millions of dollars of investment. I should also say it's a historic preservation dream town. A lot of fixer-uppers, a lot of beautiful buildings. We've had many investors who've come in and just fallen in love with the town.
Somebody earlier tonight was talking about per capita, more historic register houses per capita than almost anywhere in America.
We talked about the consolidation of the two towns in 1970. Mm-hmm. And that kind of coincided with the growth of the historic preservation movement in the United States. So the National Historic Preservation Act was passed in 1966. And after that, you kind of have the preservation movement going. And we were fortunate in our town in 1970 to have some enlightened community leaders who kind of just got on that bandwagon and said, we need to fix up Old Town, we need to fix up the plaza. And so Las Vegas got in on the ground floor of historic preservation.
And isn't there also that layered with Main Street
Yes. Yeah. So Las Vegas has been a Main Street downtown revitalization community since 1986. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing downtown revitalization for 40 years.
So all said and done, it follows, looking in from the outside, looking in, this is my first day here, that what attracts me to hear what I found so far is history and architecture. Those would be two big draws to why somebody would be having an allure to come here.
What we've also heard are the people that live here. Mm-hmm. We've always attracted certain eccentrics and people who love small town culture. Yeah. And I think we've also have a great authentic town. So people say hello to each other on the street and hang out in coffee shop. Yeah. It's a very friendly, welcoming kind of town.
Kind of the best of Mayberry RFD.
Yeah, you know, it's like a little Mayberry still. Yeah. And so people really are very protective of that. They don't want it to change that much.
And there, some people are so passionate about not touching that dial that they're not in favor of tourism, right?
Well, you know, we used to say we don't want to be sanctificated because our, you know, beautiful city nearby, our capital city, people just fell in love with that town so much that it just attracted a lot of wealth and outsiders, and it changed very quickly. And so people don't really want that to happen here. In a way, Las Vegas has always been able to regulate its growth, either by being too poor, or depression, or wildfire. You know, something has happened that has kind of kept the lid on us growing too fast.
Sarah Jo Matthews, the passionate advocate for experiencing historic Las Vegas and the proprietor of the Prairie Hill Cafe and adjacent Byron T. Saloon, front row center in the historic Plaza Hotel.
I was a rodeo announcer, so I'll really like blast your mic.
You did a good job.
My name is Sarah Jo Matthews. I'm the proprietor of Prairie Hill Cafe and Byron T's Saloon in the historic Plaza Hotel in Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Tell us about Las Vegas. You love this place.
I do love this place. I was raised on a cattle ranch north of Las Vegas, where my family has lived for over 125 years. So Las Vegas is somewhere near and dear to my heart, a little bit like Elmo kind of touched on. When you're young, you don't always see how fantastic Las Vegas is, but growing up and moving away and traveling makes you realize what a special, unique place this is.
Which you did. You went away, yeah.
Yeah, and it has a certain magic around it, and I think that I know that people who visit Las Vegas from the outside world, they stumble upon it and they're like, what is this magical place? It's an enigma. It's just a very, very special little community.
Try and put your finger on a little bit of the magic.
The architecture is one thing. People will stumble into this rural community in northern New Mexico where we have these gorgeous stone buildings. We also have aspects that are remnants from the Santa Fe Trail. The Wild West, we have the beautiful Fort Union Monument. It's a melting pot of so many different cultures. And what I think makes Las Vegas so special compared to other cities in the Southwest or even New Mexico is we are truly, we're ourselves. We've never become an outsider's perspective of, you know, what our community should be. The shops that you walk into are owned by the people manning the counter. They're not owned by some rich guy in Chicago. The people who live here are super invested in their community and they're invested in one another. It's like a Hispanic Stars Hollow. I like to tell that to people if anyone's a Gilmore Girls fan when I'm trying to explain Las Vegas. We all know each other, know maybe too much about each other, but there's a lot of quirky characters. There's lots of artists who are very close to Santa Fe. A lot of people who own small galleries here also show works in Santa Fe, which is one of, you know, the art capitals of the world.
Do art seekers come here?
Definitely, yeah.
So they know the word's getting out.
Yeah.
Do you think this could be one of the dynamic economic growth areas for the town?
I think there's always been a place for the arts in Las Vegas, New Mexico. We're a place that's very rich in culture, whether it's our traditional cuisine, you know, our traditional music, and art. These are things I feel like have always been a part of Las Vegas, but do definitely make it a destination, especially when you travel around like the historic plaza and you see all the unique little businesses. And again, they're owned by people who actually live here and are invested in our town. Is it special?
A little more insight about some of the local businesses that you think are the most fun.
for being such a small town, maybe I'm partial because I'm in the food and beverage industry, but we have a lot of pretty iconic restaurants, and I feel like for having as small of a population as we have a pretty bustling food and beverage industry here. That's one thing.
Favorite, other than your own?
Other than my own.
We'll get to there. If you were to take us out to eat somewhere tonight, where would you take us?
Well, we've already eaten at the best place. We've already eaten at Prairie Hill Cafe. Does it have to be dinner? Could it be breakfast?
No, yeah.
And again, this is how painfully small this town is, but cute and charming. My best friend's dad is Charlie from Charlie's Spick and Span. So Charlie's is a great breakfast cafe where they make their own tortillas and donuts. It's the meeting greeting place. So I would definitely take you by Charlie's, as you've already had, you know, amazing food at Prairie Hill Cafe. That's a great spot. I also think Northern New Mexico, look at our landscape. People have this idea of like, oh, you know, New Mexico's this desert. We're at almost 7,000 feet and we have these beautiful plains, and Las Vegas in Spanish means the meadows. We have our wildlife refuge. We have the tail end of the Sangre de Cristos. Great skiing, fishing. It's really a beautiful place for people who love the outdoors. We have four different seasons, and then that brings me back to the culture. So any time of year that you visit Las Vegas, there's something great going on. Whether our historic park is filled with music festivals or the Las Vegas fiestas, which is super traditional, or you come during Christmas and they're doing Christmas tours, you know, the church is lit up and you get to try some of our super traditional foods like tamales, empanadas, or empanaditas. It's just a special place.
You don't have any Hiltons or Marriotts, but you do have some awesome historic hotels.
We do.
Just stay and talk to us about a couple of
your favorites. We definitely do. I think that people here and tourists see the value. We don't have really strip mall culture, which a lot of places in the U.S. do, you know. They scrub away history, you pave over it, and you put a strip mall, right? That hasn't happened in Las Vegas. People keep investing in these historic buildings and these historic communities and these historic homes. There's homes that people live in on the backside of this hotel, and that was once part of the Santa Fe Trail. So I think that a huge part of our culture is honoring our history while we move into the future. And people here are very proud. We're proud of where we come from. We're proud of our history. And being proud of those things and holding on to those traditions is what has made us special as time goes on, right?
Your restaurant is right in the front room of a historic hotel.
It is. It definitely is.
Give us a moment about the hotel itself.
So the hotel was built in 1883, and it's gone through many different phases of life. It was much smaller and additionally an adobe building, and then it burnt down. And I believe in the late 1890s, 1900s, it was rebuilt. There's been times where, you know, some of the biggest names in the Southwest were here, you know, outlaws. We were at dinner talking about, you know, the businesses that Doc Holliday owned, or, you know, Billy the Kid was here. He was held in a jail cell on top of Tito's building on Bridge Street. Also some characters. One of the quirkiest, coolest things about this hotel, the Plaza Hotel, is a lot of people actually come here who are ghost hunters. There's a few rooms they say are the most haunted rooms in the hotel, but I can tell you, as someone who started in this industry at 15, the most haunted room in the hotel is the bar, and it is haunted by Byron T. Mills, the resident ghost of the hotel, who at one point owned the hotel, and he was also the mayor of our small town.
One more before we go into your restaurant, right front row center in the hotel. What's the name of the hotel?
The Historic Plaza Hotel in Las Vegas, New Mexico.
And the name of your restaurant inside of it?
Prairie Hill Cafe and Byron T's Saloon.
Okay, a moment about your restaurant, because you were raving to me earlier about how you source your food.
Yeah, so a little bit about how Prairie Hill Cafe came to be. I started working in the food industry at 15 in this very place. I was a waitress here. I went on to work all over the state of New Mexico and do an array of different things, but I come from a family with a background in agriculture here. So our beef is farm to table from our ranch. Just 6 miles north of Las Vegas, where we have raised our own beef for over 125 years. So Prairie Hill Road is the name of the road that our family ranches on. And a lot of the food we serve is in homage to my great grandmother, who came here in a covered wagon. And it's also a blend of two cultures. I'm a Coyote, so my dad is an Anglo cowboy, and my mom is a Latina, a Chicana. And so you'll find gringo tacos, and you'll find enchiladas, and you'll find ribeyes. It's kind of a melting pot, a lot like our town.
And you source your greens locally too,
We
right?
do. So we try to get as many things locally as possible. We're a community that's really rich in ag. Most small communities across the U.S., everyone had chickens one or two generations ago. Everyone had chickens. Everyone had goats. Here, there was like 12 different dairies, maybe even more. We've kind of gotten away from that. And we're still a community very rich in agriculture. So if we don't support each other, we'll cease to exist. So, you know, I buy my eggs and our greens from local people. We produce our own beef, and we just try to keep it as local as possible. And that's also what makes things taste good, right? You can literally taste the local flavors and the food that was sourced from our neighbors.
I love it. Before we go, if you were to invite a friend that's never been here to come to Las Vegas, what would you do to entice them? What would you say? What would be the highlights of why they should come?
There's so many different activities. I would take them to our natural hot springs at night. It would be even better if it's snowing. And you can look up at the lit up United World College, which literally looks like a Hogwarts castle. On the weekend, I would take them to the farmer's market where you can buy fresh baked goods and pastries and all kinds of local crafts and stuff. I would take them to the beautiful shops around the plaza, and maybe we would wrap up at the Fort Union Drive-In Theater. For being a small town, there's always something to do, and there's so many fun activities that you can't find anywhere else.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
PrairieHillCafe.com, or you can follow us on social media at Prairie Hill Cafe on Facebook or Prairie Hill Cafe on Instagram.
I love it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming to visit our special little town. I hope you enjoy it.
I do. Already. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the real Las Vegas in New Mexico. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.